It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Woolforth. On today's show, we're talking about a different kind of race, one where you have as much support and camaraderie as you do competition. Long-distance road relays have been around for a while, including the Klondike Road Relay that follows the Gold Rush route of 1898 every fall with teams of runners who ride along in vans while taking turns on foot. We'll hear about that race on today's show and a new road relay planned for this summer that will run from Eagle River to Seward. And we'll learn about road relays around the nation and what the experience is like to participate with lots of other runners, lots of friendship, and lots of miles to cover. Well, my first guest today is Nathan Luke. And Nathan is a runner who has done lots of these long relays, different parts of the country. And now he's also race director of the Alaska Relay, which is a relay that actually hasn't happened yet, right, Nathan? I mean, this is something
hasn't officially happened.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
We had the test run, but
sounds like there's a story to tell there. And anyway, he kind of grew up doing these long distance relays, coming from Oregon. And you said you did your first relay at age 11.
I did, yeah.
So tell me about that experience.
Well, so I grew up in Portland, which is its own interesting niche community of runners.
Uh-huh.
And of course, Portland is where Hood to Coast is, which is the, to my knowledge, the oldest relay of this type, 2-day overnight uh-huh. kind of relay. And it's also the biggest now. They have over 1,000 teams a year. It's insane.
Wow.
So I grew up with that kind of just, you know, it's happening in your background. And my dad had done it a number of times. And our church had occasionally put together a team. And I remember when I assume I was 10, I just remember seeing, you know, the little news spot happening that they put on for it.
Of all these people running.
Yeah. You know, hey, you know, these people out doing it, and this happened this weekend, uh-huh. and, you know, how they end the newscast. And they interviewed this kid who was my age, who was doing it. And I thought, well, if he can do it,
uh-huh.
Dad, you got to let me try this. And so they talked with the team at our church, and they're like, yeah, we can give him one of the easier sets, and yeah, we'd love to have him try it. So I was the only kid on this team that was, you know, all adults, and it was a blast. Yeah.
Yeah. So set the scene for us here. And just to, like, listeners who don't know what these relays are, essentially you're covering a vast distance, but you're taking turns.
Yes.
And so each person runs for a time period, then gets in the van or whatever mode of transportation you're using, and somebody else runs for a while.
Yes. So the way this works is, I mean, they're usually 200 miles, at least this model of race, which most of them are, you know, they're copies of Hood to Coast. You know,
okay.
And there's a number
of them.
So that
was sort of the granddaddy of relays.
And so what they are is they're courses that are somewhere in the vicinity of 200 miles, broken into 36 legs. And then you do usually a team of 12 people split into two vehicles, and everyone runs three times. In sequence. So you'd be runner one, you'd do the first leg, and then the 13th leg and the 25th leg. Of course, sometimes people mix it up. Sometimes there's, you know, more intense runners who will do it as a team of six and run twice as far. Mm-hmm. Occasionally you see people who are, you know, like Hood. I remember one year there was a dad and son duo team did the whole Hood to Coast.
Crazy.
They're people love the challenge.
Yeah.
You know?
So you're running, I guess to cover 200 miles takes a long time. So you're running and then you're getting quite a long break.
Yes. So if you're a team of 12, you're split into two vehicles, six each.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so the first vehicle starts and they have their runner out doing leg one, and you know, where they can, they stop and they cheer for their runner and give them water. You know, it's meant to be very social as much as possible and fun. You know, people do costumes and funny team names and stuff like that. While they're going through their legs, the other van is off relaxing. And so then after the sixth leg, they both meet at that exchange and the next van starts and the first one gets to go rest. So, you know, depending on the speed of your team, your runners, you have anywhere from 6 to 10 hours between each of your runs.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And then each run is going to be, I guess, if 200 divided by 36, like 5-8 miles.
They vary. Generally, they're 5 to 6 miles. Mm-hmm. On my course here in Alaska, we've got a couple that are around 9 miles. We also have a couple that are three or less.
Yeah.
I think the shortest is 2.5 miles.
And some are flat and some are very steep. I know the Klondike Relay, you really don't want to get stuck with that leg when you have to run up through the Chilkoot Pass or the White Pass. Yeah.
Exactly. Someone's got to draw that short straw.
Right, right. If you're a newbie, you're probably going to get stuck with it. Yeah. So you're doing this as an 11-year-old, and hanging out with all these adults. I can see that really being something that excites you and makes you want to come back and do it again.
Definitely. Yeah, I was hooked. It was so much fun. It was much the running as the interaction with people, in the van, getting out and cheering for other people running and just the variety of what you're running, whereas you do your average 10K. I mean, there's a mix of different things, but a lot of times, they're pretty flat. Mm-hmm. And you're out there by yourself. You might have other friends with you, but you're there to run your 10K.
And it's pretty an individual competition. You're really mm-hmm. trying to do better than the other people. Whereas with this, you're kind of encourage your team members.
Absolutely. Uh-huh. And in most cases, when I've participated in these races, most people are supportive of other teams too. We're all out there just having fun and trying to do whatever our personal best is. If you may be an elite runner doing sub sixes, you might be on the couch to 5K plan, and this is your first time doing anything like this.
Uh-huh.
We want everyone to be able to try it and be able to enjoy it.
Yeah, neat. And that sort of changes the chemistry, doesn't it, of the event from an individual sort of achievement to a group, sort of a group achievement that maybe involves people who aren't super competitive.
Mm-hmm.
Neat.
Definitely.
So after that first time, you kind of got hooked and you did it a number of times more.
I did. I did it another time 2 years later, and then our team kind of disbanded, people come and go. And after a couple of years, when I was in high school, I really wanted to do it again, and I ended up captaining the team. And I did that a couple of times. And then as I got into my 20s as an adult, I started exploring other races of the same type around the country. So I've done one in Utah, one in Arizona, one out on Cape Cod.
Wow. How did you organize that? Did you take your whole team with you, or
well,
join
a lot of
team
teams,
when you got there?
A lot of these races, they have ways for individual runners who are interested in trying a race to put their name out there. Because, with a team of 12, it's almost inevitable. You either can't find enough people, or
somebody doesn't show up.
Life happens, you know? Like, every time I captain, I think every time, within a month of the race, someone dropped for some reason.
Right.
Sudden family change of plans, emergency, mm-hmm. Someone had kidney stones 1 year, the day before the race.
Oh, wow.
I mean, it's just life happens.
Yeah.
And so it's a great opportunity for someone who isn't connected to be like, pick me.
I'll do it.
Yeah, I'll do it. So that's how I did most of those around the country.
Just showed up and they have a website or something where you can get on a team?
Yeah, they usually do a matching system, teams looking for runners, runners looking for teams. And
I'm curious, is that those seem so different. I mean, Cape Cod to Utah, those are like totally different environments.
Oh, yeah. So the Cape Cod one was the only time I've ever been to New England. It was a great way to see it.
Oh, really? Yeah.
The race started somewhere near Plymouth and did kind of a loop in that area and then went all the way out to the tip of the Cape.
Oh, that's beautiful, isn't it?
It was gorgeous. But it was very flat. There wasn't a lot of hills. Whereas the Utah one, if you're familiar with the topography of the Salt Lake City area, it's all on the backside of the Wasatch Mountains, and they actually climb over three different significant passes.
Wow.
Over the course of this race. And so I've done that one twice, and 1 year I had the descent of one of the passes, and I dropped, at least 2,000 feet in 4 miles.
Oh, your quads must have been killing it.
Well, I was a bit younger, and I decided, I'm just gonna crank it. I was doing faster than 7-minute miles down this mountain, and I get to the
it's your
bottom.
Your only chance to do that.
I get to the bottom, and I my blood sugar's pretty much dry, and I crashed, and I still had a mile and a half to go.
Oh no!
So
if that happens, if you are on your leg and you just are like totally running out of energy, your team's counting on you to make it to the end of your leg, right?
Yes, to a certain extent. So we don't want people to kill themselves, or cause any significant injuries or anything. But we want them to try and finish. So where we can, the teams are with their runners, like not shadowing them directly, but able to kind of leapfrog them. You know, you go ahead, you stop, and you get out. And yeah, if your runner's struggling,
because you can't drive, you can't hold up traffic.
No, absolutely not. This isn't not a closed course race.
Yeah,
we're out there with everyone else who's out there. Mm-hmm.
Do the races pretty much always take place on roadways then?
For the most part, yeah. Sometimes they utilize, you know, trails, paths that are convenient to the route they're trying to take. Like in our case, I take advantage of a lot of the trails here in Anchorage. We do the Ship Creek Trail, we do the Coastal Trail, we do the Campbell Creek Trail, except for the fact that they broke one of those bridges this spring.
I know, but so disgusted with that.
But yeah, where you can, you take kind of the more interesting route, because
right.
I mean, everyone who's, you know, runs, they've done their neighborhood, they run on sidewalks, and
yeah,
you know, one is generally the same to another. And so when we can, we want to give a runner an enjoyable run.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like going down down towards Seward, yeah, we're on the highway. We're on the shoulder.
Yeah.
And so we're, you know, sometimes there's places where we tell, you know, the vans, you know, you can't stop here. You need to go on.
Mm-hmm.
And then on others, it's, you know, just pull over in a safe place. You know, make sure you're completely out of traffic. And yeah, get out and
wait,
support your
runner. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So you are wearing an Oregon shirt. Did you go to school in Eugene, or?
I didn't. I'm a Portland State alum.
And were you a college athlete?
No. No, I was never at that kind of level of running.
Right. And so this is, I mean, this is something that is not necessarily, even though it's a huge distance, it's not necessarily for the kind of super uber athlete. I mean, it's something you're obviously not going to go and run if you're total couch potato, but mm-hmm. it's something for everybody. It's something that's meant to be fun.
Definitely, yeah. It's interesting, you know, some with the relays that have been around for a while, there's different dynamics in different races. So like Hood to Coast, it's the one I kind of know the most about. Nike and Adidas both put together, you know, elite level teams that, you know, it's usually one or the other that wins every year, and these guys are doing 200 miles in under 20 hours.
Yeah,
it's
right.
Insane. And
but then there's 1,000 other people behind.
But there's 1,000 other people, yeah, or 1,000 other teams, so 12,000 people.
Oh, I mean, gosh, I had no idea it was that big.
It's unbelievable. It's actually a state treasure in Oregon. The legislature officially recognized it.
Wow,
it's that big a deal.
12,000 people. That must, I mean, nobody's driving on that road, right? I mean, that's
they are
overwhelming.
They're out
people.
There with on the shoulder of Highway 26 between Portland and Mount Hood, and yeah, usually when a race like this is progressing, the first day the teams are more spread out, and then the second day they start getting closer together as they get to the finish. And
I would think that would be the other way around.
Well, they try and spread the starts. So
oh, I see.
They, you know, with that many teams, they're starting all day long.
You can't start all at once. It would be ridiculous.
No, it'd be unbelievable.
Yeah.
So, yeah, usually the slower teams start in the morning, and then it slowly progresses up.
Oh, I
to
see.
The
so then the faster ones catch up teams. With them.
Yep.
Oh, that's fun. So we are talking about these long-distance road relays, which I didn't realize were such a big thing around the country. I knew we had the Klondike Relay here in Alaska. And my guest is Nathan Luke, who is race director of a new relay, which is, you know, just getting started. And so there's an opportunity to be on the ground floor of this and try it out. My name is Charles Woolforth, and the show is Outdoor Explorer. So you decided to try to have a relay that would run through Anchorage and down to the Kenai Peninsula, and there have got to be a lot of steps in putting together something like this. First, let's just talk about the course. Where is the relay going to go?
So it starts at Muir Lake Park up in Chugiak, and we go from there down along the Old Glenn Highway, you know, on the kind of sidewalk path that goes with it, in the Eagle River, and through Eagle River, to ultimately to Bartlett High School.
And there's a bike trail along the glen.
There
is. In that section.
Yep.
Yeah.
So it's an 8-mile stretch from Eagle River High School to Bartlett High School. So some lucky person's going to do that one for each team. And then from Bartlett High School, we get down into through the Mountain View neighborhood and onto the Ship Creek Trail.
Oh, nice.
And take that all the way into downtown, connect onto the coastal trail.
Which is a trail I think a lot of people don't even know about. It's a really gorgeous bike trail with lots
really
of big
is.
Bridges. Yeah.
Yeah. It kind of this nice mix of, I mean, it is in the industrial mm-hmm. district, but with the creek right there yep. and there's enough foliage in the, you know, around the train line that mm-hmm. it's kind of just tucked away.
It's, and it's all bridges and tunnels. It runs from Mountain View to the Government Hill neighborhood, basically, mm-hmm. down to the mouth of Ship Creek.
Yep. Right down by the train station there. Mm-hmm. So
then take the coastal trail at that point?
Yep. All the way out to Kincaid Park.
Oh, nice.
And that's
now
where...
Now you're in my territory.
Yeah. So out at Kincaid is the first van exchange, so where runner six for the first van would hand off to runner seven.
I see. So six runners will have done the relay from Mirror Lake to Kincaid. Mm-hmm. Okay, got you.
Then from Kincaid, we come out on Raspberry and kind of have to use sidewalks and surface streets to get down to the start of the Campbell Creek Trail on Diamond.
That's a section that we really needed to have, like, some trails.
Something to connect those together. Yeah. Yeah. So someday, you know, I'm sure it's in development somewhere.
Yeah.
Then we go up the Campbell Creek Trail all the way to Albrecht Park at Dr. MLK Jr. Drive and Elmore.
Okay. So across the whole city again.
Mm-hmm. Then we do a loop through the campus district. So we actually go right by the radio station
okay,
here.
Okay, cool.
And then from there we go down Elmore to, and then Abbott to Service High School, and then up the hillside all the way to.
So this is a lot of nice running where you really don't have to worry about traffic. You're in some really pretty country.
Yeah. Especially it's great that we're able to go through Anchorage and do so much of it without having to do a lot of street crossings.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. The only exception there is with this trail bridge collapse.
Bridge,
we
yeah.
might have to reroute, you know, it depends if that gets addressed right away or not. But
yeah.
But even with that, we'll still have lots of trail sections mm-hmm. here in Anchorage. So then when we get to the end of the leg on Potter Valley Drive, and it finishes at the bottom right at Seward Highway, which that's one of my favorite legs personally, because you get this great view of the inlet and Turnagain Arm, and your teams will be up there late, you know, Friday evening, probably between 7 and 10 o'clock. So hopefully a great sunset or kind of starting when they're up there. And anyway, so when they finish there, we actually will skip the first 15 miles of the highway. Just kind of in working with the Department of Transportation, we've agreed that stretch is just, it's too dangerous to have runners on the shoulder. So what'll happen is...
Because just the amount of traffic, speed
the amount
of traffic
and the blind corners and
yeah.
and just, and the fact that we're still a young, small race.
Right.
You know, if you have 1,000 teams with 1,000 people running that stretch, you're pretty obvious and you have a lot more, you know, both clout and to negotiate things and obvious visual presence to
right,
the drivers.
Right. There's the Turnagain Arm Trail there, but that's kind of a dirt trail, maybe not suitable for this.
Yeah, and it's a combination of there's nowhere, that's a really long stretch. It'd mm-hmm. be, I think, like 15 miles that one person would have to do.
Right.
Which kind of, there's
support,
definitely people who can do it, but I want this to be accessible to everyone.
Right,
And then there's, it's a trail. If, you know, someone, even as simple as rolls their ankle, they're off on this trail. And, you know, how do we get there to help them? And that's a lot more logistics. And, it's just easier when we stay close to the
road. So you'll just sort of leapfrog that section by car.
Yeah. So what will happen is that 12th runner will finish. And when they finish, we'll have a phone release. We'll have a person at each end who will then tell the other van for their team, okay, now you can go.
Got you.
And they're going to start at the Bird Creek trailhead for the Bird mm-hmm. to Gird trail.
Oh, nice.
Yep. And then, so then from there, we're on the trail there to the Bird to Gird into Girdwood, and then on the shoulder of the highway from there down to Seward. And we do skip one other section near Moose Pass, where, again, it's just not safe to be on the road.
Some of the shoulders get pretty narrow down there.
There's basically no shoulder. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm kind of excited. There's a construction project scheduled for a couple of years from now that's meant to put a real shoulder in mm-hmm. down there, so we'll be able to gain that part of the course back.
And yeah. So it's there's a couple of major climbs. Going up into Turnagain Pass is probably the biggest. You've got mm-hmm. about 1,000-foot elevation gain that's pretty much continuous.
It is. The way we've broken out the legs, though, it's split in half, roughly. So one runner will get about halfway up, and there's a nice, huge, you know, wayside pull-off kind of thing where the next runner will start, and they'll go all the way to the rest area that's just over the top.
So, this sounds like an amazing event. When is it taking place?
It's July 7th and 8th.
Okay.
So a Friday, Saturday, following Independence Day.
And what does it take for somebody to put together a team and you know, entry fee and all that stuff?
Well, first of all, it takes a little bit of motivation. You got to convince your friends. And I mean, when you're in other places, like again, Oregon with the Hood Coast, everyone knows what it is.
Right.
And a lot of people just, even if they're not runners, it's on their bucket list. Like, oh, one day I'm going to do that. I'm going to train this spring and I'll be ready to do it. So the challenge, I think, for a lot of people here is for those who are interested, like, yeah, I want to do this, is, okay, now I got to go find 11 more people.
Right.
So we've tried to make that a little easier. One team for 12 people is $1,200, so $100 a person. But we have an option where people can register half a team, and then get paired with another half team. And it works pretty naturally since you're already split into two vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's easy to, you know, get your little group of friends and pair off with another group of friends and not have to be too far out of your comfort zone with new people if that's, you know, not your forte. Helps keep the organizing part for the captain a little easier. So.
Right. And do you have a deadline for when they need to actually sign up?
We don't have an actual deadline for sign up. The price will go up on June 1st to $1,300 for a team. And of course, at that point, we can't guarantee that they will have, you know, their finisher medal and their race shirt on race day. You know, there's things that have to be ordered
you know,
at a certain point in order to have them in time for the event. They will get them. You just, if you register 2 days before the race, it's coming in the mail later.
Right. So this is the first running. And so people may be thinking, well, how do we know this is actually going to happen? And I guess you did it a couple of years ago and you got blocked by a forest fire.
We did. We were supposed to have our first year last year.
Mm-hmm.
And we were a little later in July. And I'm sure people in Anchorage remember there was that fire on McHugh Creek that closed the
whole highway
was
closed,
for a day. And we ultimately decided to cancel. And part of that decision was the fact that there were only two teams. But it wasn't the reason. Well, there's this fire and we're not sure what's going to happen. We need to decide now when, you know, a couple of days before the race, what we're going to do. And because there were only two teams, I was able to talk with each of the captains and just kind of decide, you know, I think it'd be best if we cancel. It'll be easy to cancel because I can, you know, there's only two teams to handle, you know, refunds and logistic changes and stuff. But this year,
how many teams do you think you'll have?
I'm shooting for 20. That's my goal. It'd be great if there were more, but 20 is my comfortable number for a first year. We've got 7 officially registered. Several more that where I've talked with people who I know they're getting the team together, but they aren't going to register till they have, you know, all their runners, which I understand. It's a big output of money for a whole team.
And yeah.
So you want to make sure you got everything lined
up. Make it happen. So that seems like enough to have sort of a critical mass, that you'll have some of that, you know, positive energy of like, we're all in this together. Because 17, just a 7 is like, what is that? It's like 80 or 90 people.
It is. Yeah. In terms of participants, yeah, it's a nice starting number.
Uh-huh.
But my goal with 20 is I think that's a large enough number of teams that there's a good amount of interaction between the teams. There's kind of this critical mass that we're hoping for of energy and, you know, people seeing each other.
So you don't feel like you're just out there on the highway by yourself for hours, right?
Exactly. Which, I mean, when we did the test run, that was our experience. And we had fun doing it anyways, but we all had actually done this kind of thing. And
so what kind of things did you run into on your test run?
Road construction, always a factor in Alaska. We had three known road construction projects on the highway that we knew were out there. And I'd been communicating with the Department of Transportation about this at that time, you know, trying to figure out, you know, this is what I want to do. What do we need to work on? And turned out that all three of them were on weekend hold when we went through. So it wasn't an issue. Yeah. We hadn't figured out exactly what nighttime was going to be like for us. I mean, obviously, when it's dark, and you wear, you know, reflective gear and lights and everything. But obviously, you know, in Alaska, not only is night pretty brief, the twilight hours are very long, and the effect of you know, different levels of darkness, you know, are different in different places, and trying to figure out, okay, at what point do we say this is when gear is required, you need to be visible, and,
right,
you know, making sure we do that safely. So,
so yeah, some different things to learn for sure. Mm-hmm. I it's interesting when you know, I've driven that highway all my life, hundreds and hundreds of times. Mm-hmm. And then when I rode it on a bike, it's a totally different experience, and you see so much more, positive and negative. I mean, the views are more beautiful, and sort of the sense of like the outdoors is fabulous. And then the number of dead animals and and junk on the side of the road is mind-blowing. Have you found that in all of these road races you've done?
No, actually, I've never encountered a dead animal. One time running a relay, I didn't encounter mm-hmm. it, but a bear did appear on the course. This was one in Colorado.
That could definitely happen.
That could definitely happen. Yeah, that's another reason why I want to stay on the highway.
Yeah,
try and be able to respond easier to that kind of thing. But no, I've never seen dead animals. I actually, interestingly, when we did this test run, I did find on my last run someone's shoe, a running shoe, just one.
What happened to that person? Right?
I have no idea. And I mean, we took a photo of it. It was funny, and we thought maybe it came out of the other van when they drove by, and wasn't anyone in our group. So
I know,
now we have this kind of relic or icon for that first.
Yeah, event. Absolutely. Well, this sounds like it's going to be really fun. It must be rewarding for you and a little bit nerve-wracking to be putting on a big event for the very first time. I mean, you know, maybe 10 years from now, we'll say, oh, yeah, I remember Nathan putting this thing on way back when. But right now you're sort of like, is it going to work? Is it not going to work? All the things that can go wrong, you haven't found that out yet.
Yep. And all those things and, you know, explaining how it's supposed to work to all the different people who we have to interact with, you know, all the mm-hmm. the government agencies we need to get permits from, and, you know, explaining, no, this isn't like, you know, the marathon where we're going to close everything. You know, we're going to be out there spread out and, you know, open to traffic. We don't need to stop traffic here. We don't need to do this. And it's a process. It's been several years I've been working on this.
I bet. So. Yeah. Well, we'll get you back maybe after it's over and find out the pitfalls and the successes that you have. Thanks so much for coming in.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So Nathan Luke has been with me. He's a race director for the Alaska Relay, which is coming up. And if you want to get involved, you can find Nathan's website on our site at outdoorexplorer.org and follow through and sign up, or just maybe grab one of those extra spots like you're talking about, right?
Yep. We'll have that going up on the website pretty quick.
All right. Well, thanks for being with us. And stay with us as Outdoor Explorer continues.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Find the show anytime as a free podcast in the iTunes store, or connect with us online at alaskapublic.org.
This is Charles Woolforth on Outdoor Explorer, and today our topic is long-distance relays. And the longest-lasting one is the Klondike Relay, which runs from Skagway to Whitehorse. And we have some sound from that race. A couple of years ago, in 2015, Jeremy Shea of K2 Radio in Juneau joined 1,600 people on the 10-part race from Skagway over the Coast Mountains to Whitehorse, Yukon. It's part endurance trial, part road trip, and part party. And for a lot of people running from both sides of the border, the 110-mile road relay is an annual tradition. So please join us as we listen to Jeremy's report.
The race begins on Skagway's historic main drag, Broadway, in front of an idling steam locomotive blocking off the street.
2 minutes! 2 minutes!
My team is starting around dusk. Amid the Gold Rush-era buildings and dwindling light, glow sticks are cracking to life, and runners are warming up, some in costume. Brian Vandernald is running our team's first leg, which is 8.8 miles long.
The beer might have been a bad idea.
Or the best idea.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Brian cruises through his leg while two carloads of us hopscotch ahead to cheer him on in the dark at regular intervals.
Oh, oh, oh!
We're howling and wearing plush wolf hats because our team is named Wolf Taco. There's not much of a story behind the name. Someone suggested it and no one objected. I'm up next. Lake 2 is the Klondike's shortest at 5.6 miles, but also the steepest. At the checkpoint waiting for Brian, I'm anxious, worried that I'll be way off pace, that I'm overdressed and will overheat, and that I've misplaced my microphone in the dark for this story. I asked the Klondike veterans on my team for some last-minute advice.
Go that way fast.
Yep.
Don't uphill.
Always
gets
run
in your
uphill.
Way.
It's a relentless climb up to White Pass. There are no flats or saddles, just one short downhill after the summit, near the checkpoint to Leg 3. There is one thing putting me at ease.
Oh, I'm just glad it's not raining.
But 1 mile later...
Oh, it's raining. Now it's raining.
And did I mention I'm asthmatic? Another mile goes by in the dark. As one runner passes me, she says,
God, this leg sucks.
Yeah.
It's actually beautiful in the day, but it's 10 o'clock at night and we can only see a few feet of the highway in front of us. Near the end of my leg, at about 3,000 feet elevation, I've literally run above the rain clouds. Sky opens up to a zillion stars, and in front of me, I track the red taillights of a car up and over the horizon that I can't otherwise make out, Christopher Columbus style. My checkpoint is just on the other side, downhill. I'm soaked at the finish and try to keep warm around a fire barrel. The weather clears up, and about 5 hours later, our fifth runner and team captain, Corey McCrill, finishes an epic leg under the Northern Lights.
I've heard over the years lots of lore about running those middle-of-the-night legs on the Klondike and seeing Northern Lights, but every year before this that I've done it has been totally cloudy and I've never seen anything like that, so this was really awesome.
Corey's got quite the legacy. His dad, Mike McCrill, just finished his 29th Klondike. We hand the race over to the Wolf Taco Dawn team and sneak in a few hours of sleep at a noisy campground. When I wake up, it's fall in the Yukon. Our last runner crosses the finish line around 3 p.m. Yukon time. After a long soak in Tahkeenee Hot Springs, we pile into a hotel room to discuss highs and lows from our runs over some victory bourbon. Sarah Bronstein is a Klondike veteran. This time, she ran Leg 4, which is 13 miles.
I love passing people. I got to pass lots of people. And I was feeling really good until Corey gave me my second gel packet at mile 7, and it just did not sit well with me. And there was some adversity that I had to overcome.
Adversity is a euphemism that Wolf Taco picked up. Sarah climbed down into a canyon to take care of business.
But even this turned into a bonus because then I got to go back up onto the road and chase down all of the people that I had just passed and pass them again.
Oh my God.
All the same people. It was great.
Our final time was 17 hours, 48 minutes, 11 seconds. Just shy of the winning time by about 7 hours. Better luck next year. From the Klondike Highway, I'm Jeremy Shea.
It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Walforth. We're talking about long distance relays today, and you just heard from Jeremy Shea of K2 Radio in Juneau from 2015 when he ran the Klondike Relay. And now we have the coordinator of the Klondike Relay joining us from Whitehorse to tell us about the race. And I've always thought it sounded so fun and I wanted to get involved, and I haven't done so. So there's a lot that I want to learn. Sandra Soares is in Whitehorse. And she's with Sport Yukon, which is an umbrella sports organization for sport activities in the Yukon. And she is also the coordinator and has been for the last year, 3 years of the Klondike Relay. Thanks for being with us, Sandra.
Thank you for having me.
So let's get some of the preliminaries done here. This how long is the relay, and like how many team members? Do you put together to do it, and sort of what's the general outline of the race?
Okay, last year was actually our biggest relay yet. We had about 200 teams participate in our event. 170 of those were running the 10 legs from Skagway to Whitehorse, and so we brought in about 2,000 participants last year itself. So it was kind of our big to-do. This year we're going into our 35th, and we've opened up the categories from Skagway to Whitehorse to 180 teams. So we're hoping to fill that this year. And then second half of the race is from Carcross, Yukon to Whitehorse, and we see youth teams and our walking teams start at that point. So, yeah.
So 2,000 people coming for a race is a lot in some fairly small communities. I mean, that must really take over the whole place when they show up.
Yeah, pretty much. It's hard to get a hotel room or a rental car that weekend, that's for sure.
Uh-huh. And the span of competitors, it sounds like you don't really have to be a super-duper runner to do it.
No, not at all. We do definitely have our competitive teams that come back every year, and they kind of have a race of their own against each other. But it's open to recreational people as well. It's essentially for fun. And so we just invite everyone who's interested in participating and being part of the event to come out.
So, yeah, let's go over the geography of this for some of our listeners who may not know about it. Even though it's been around 35 years, it's kind of a Southeast Alaska, Yukon thing, and people from Anchorage may not be totally aware. So it's essentially following the route of the Klondike Gold Rush, right? So where does it start out exactly?
So the starting line is in Skagway. In previous years, it used to start at the ferry docks. This was way before my time with Sport Yukon, but now it starts right on 2nd and Broadway is the start line in Skagway. And they run over the White Pass, famous White Pass route through British Columbia and into the Yukon, through all sorts of terrain and weather, and make it back into Whitehorse at the finish line. And that's at downtown at Rotary Park, just along the river there. So it's about 175 kilometers, which is about 110 miles, I believe, in total. So quite the distance.
Yeah, and people have heard of the Chilkoot Pass, and that there are two passes that are kind of next to each other. The White Pass is a little bit more to the south, and has the advantage that there's a highway running through it, right? So you're not like running through a forest trail. You're actually running along the side of a highway.
Yeah, it is right on the highway there. So each team has a support vehicle that follows them along the route as support. And then they run on the side of the highway from start to finish. So,
one of the challenges of this seems like it would be the topography and the fact that you have to climb up the White Pass and go over these coastal mountains to the other side. And I don't know how they choose who's going to do that part of it, but that must be the most difficult part.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's leg two. It's the shortest leg at 5.6 miles, so 9 kilometers. But it is definitely one of the harder legs. You're climbing the pass right there, so the elevation gain is huge in that area. But you're also getting your leg done pretty quick, so I think a lot of people like to get that one out of the way.
Well, I remember meeting somebody who said, "Oh, I'm going to do this Klondike thing," and they put me on leg two, and I didn't want to tell them. Oh, God, guess what? You just drew the short straw, you know, because it's going to be the newbie is going to get that one, I imagine.
Yeah, definitely. Our legs run anywhere from, the 9 kilometers, 5.6 miles, and the longest leg is leg six, and that is 16 miles, 25.6 kilometers. So that one's always a tough one to fill as well, just because it's pretty much a marathon on its own, and it's in the middle of the night, essentially. So,
wow, yeah.
People are keen to do it. People are excited, and they love this event, and they make quite the evening out of it. So
yeah. So does each person do just one leg then?
Typically, yeah, our official categories are 10 legs. You can run more than one leg if you'd like. I think it's up to 2 legs that they can run at a time. They don't have to be back-to-back. You can run, say, leg one and then leg nine later on. But most teams just do 10 legs. And then our walking teams and youth teams out of Carcross, it's a 4-leg relay and an 8-leg relay. So we have a walking team, 4-person walking team, which is legs 7 through 10. And then we also have halfway ones for the youth. So we've created that one in the last few years just so that youth could be part of our event and they don't have to run the really long distances. It would be on average about 7 to 10 kilometers rather than 20.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess if you run your leg, then you're just sort of riding in the van for the rest of the time. Then it's time to start the partying and sort of and relax. So that would be one advantage of being early.
Yeah, exactly. Just get it done, and then you can just relax and sleep if you'd like.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, most people don't sleep. It's just there's so much going on and so much excitement that I think most people end up staying up all night. And then we have a dance at the very end, a dance and awards ceremony on the Saturday. And so people are just happy to let loose and have some fun and listen to live music and have a good end to their race. So
and that's in Whitehorse.
That's in Whitehorse, yeah.
Uh-huh. So have you run the race yourself or just been an organizer?
No, I've always wanted to. It's just as a staff of Sport UConn and now race coordinator, we just don't have enough time. We're kind of full on weeks leading up, and then the event itself, we're pretty much working 24 hours a day. So
uh-huh.
I thought it'd be neat if like we could put in a Sport UConn team one year and have all the staff run a leg, but yeah, I'm not too sure if that'll happen, but it would be nice. It would be pretty neat to do it all.
Yeah, so who are most of the people who do this race? I mean, where are they coming from?
We have a huge following from Alaska, actually. Almost half of the teams that come in for our event are from the Alaska area. So Skagway, Anchorage, Juneau, Fairbanks as well, and I think Sitka. There's a couple teams from Sitka last year. And then there's a lot of people from the Yukon area. We have people come up from California and our other provinces, British Columbia, Alberta. And I think there was a few people from Seattle last year as well, so Washington uh-huh. area. But yeah.
Because there's people who like doing this and probably do it all yeah. over the country.
Yeah, I know. I think they're a little bit crazy, but... But it's all for good fun, so and a good cause, raise money for Sport UConn. So,
are you guys one of the larger relays among all the relays that are out there?
That I'm aware of, I think we're one of the biggest. I'm pretty sure. Anyway, I'm not 100%. Don't quote me on it, but
just in terms of how many people could participate, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the distance itself. So I think we're one of the biggest ones.
Well, it's kind of like the way we do things in the north, we don't take the easy route, right? So this is a relay where
no,
you have to run straight up a mountain, right? It might be a little easier to run downwards, but no.
Yeah, exactly. Well, down has its challenges too.
That's true. So and so this happens in September, and when is it happening this year?
So we always have it the weekend after our Labor Day weekend here in September. So it's the second week in September. It's the 8th and the 9th, starting in Skagway on the 8th and finishing in Whitehorse on the 9th of September.
Okay. And is that a Friday and Saturday, or what days are those of the week?
Yeah, it's a Friday and a Saturday.
Uh-huh. So you do, and does it start? I'm trying to figure out if it starts in the evening or is it staggered start, or how does the starting work out?
Yeah, so how it works, we get our teams to submit a total estimated race time for their entire team, and going on that time that they give us, we give them a start time. And our race starts at 7 o'clock, 6 o'clock Alaska time in Skagway. And then every 15 minutes after that, we start another group of about 20 to 25 people. And with the last team leaving, our quickest teams leaving around midnight, 11 o'clock Alaska time.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And so then the staggering is so that they, to group them up more so they arrive in Whitehorse closer together?
Yeah, and we have, so we have checkpoints along the way at the end of each leg. And so we have opening and closing times for those checkpoints, and those are manned by volunteers. About 15 to 20 volunteers are out there in the middle of the night waiting for these runners to come in and support them, cheer them on. And so we stagger them so that they're arriving at these checkpoints during these opening and closing times, and then essentially finishing in Whitehorse before the end of the race.
That way people don't have to stand there and wait, you know, wait for a day, right? It just shortens up the time
exactly,
they have to wait.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, on average, the checkpoints are open from about 4 hours to, and the longest one is about 8 hours, and that's around the BC-UConn border. I think that one's the longest checkpoint.
Getting towards the end, yeah.
Yeah.
It's Outdoor Explorer. My name is Charles Wolforth, and we were talking about the Klondike Relay, which is this more than 100-mile race from Skagway to Whitehorse that folks do as a relay. So you run a leg, and then you can ride in a van for the rest of the way and have fun with your friends. And it's an overnight thing, and it's one of those things that I think maybe brings back youth of being sort of crazy and doing something that's a little bit nuts, but it's a great accomplishment. And up to 2,000 people doing this, so it's huge. And my guest right now is Sandra Soares, who's a race coordinator. She's with Sport Yukon in Whitehorse. Tell us how this thing got started. It's been going on for, you said, 35 years, and it's kind of a funny thing for somebody to have thought of doing in the first place.
Yeah, definitely. So the Road Relay, a little event history, it was conceptualized in 1982 by the Tourism Industry Association of Yukon as a means of attracting visitors to the Yukon in the fall, which is essentially our off-season. And so in 1983, it was the first race, and approximately 25 teams took part at that point. And
that's actually a pretty good number for the first time.
I think so. I think that's pretty good. And I mean, we still have people in the Yukon area and Alaska, I know, that run the first race, and they always like to share their stories. And I think a couple of them are still part of not running necessarily, but organizing teams and volunteering for our event as well. So they're still around and excited to be involved in the event itself.
Uh-huh. So is it pretty much exactly the same now as it was 35 years ago?
I mean, the route is the same. I think they've changed a couple of the checkpoint locations over the years just to be a little bit safer and better suited for the leg endings. But and the start line, I know, changed from the ferry docks to 2nd and Broadway in Skagway. But essentially, the route is pretty similar. We've changed quite a bit of our timing system. We used to do it with stopwatches, and so we'd have a bunch of people up. This was up until I think about 5 or 6 years ago. We'd have a crew of people with all these stopwatches at the start line, and then when the clock would hit 7 o'clock, they would all push the start button on the stopwatches, and then they would send them up the route with our race marshals, and our race marshals would drop off the stopwatches at each checkpoint. And so as people would run through, they would record their bib number and the time on the stopwatch that they arrived.
That's kind of ingenious. I said that's kind of ingenious.
Yeah. And then at the end of the race, they would hand them into our results coordinator, and he would have to manually put in every single time for each team.
Wow.
So it was quite onerous and a huge undertaking for these volunteers. But within the last 3 to 4 years, we've started using a sport ident system, which is much easier, that each team gets a timing stick that they're assigned to their bib number. And then as they go into the checkpoint, they just dip it in the timing system, and then those times are just recorded on our website. It's not live, just because we're dealing with a lot of dead zones along the route with going through the pass and that sort of
thing. Yeah, I'm sure there's probably no cell coverage or anything back there.
No, there's still quite a few spots along the way that we don't have any coverage. So trying to get the live results for most of the race is difficult, but come car cross, it's getting much easier to do live results out of there. So our hope is to eventually have some sort of satellite system that we can do live results as soon as they dip their stick in the timing system. It's uploaded to our website, and they can see how long their leg was and that sort of thing. But
mm-hmm.
Everything in due time.
Yeah. So I'm curious as to whether they run into any hazards or difficulties along the way. I know that it's, you know, September, it shouldn't be snowy, but it could very well be raining, and there could be wildlife along the way. What sort of difficulties do people run into?
Well, last year alone is a big example. You had quite a few things happen along the way. The weather was terrible. it was pouring rain the entire time up until car cross, I believe. And it was cold. There was snow in the summit.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it was pretty cold and not the best weather along the way. We do have first aid at all the checkpoints, and so if people were having a hard time or getting hypothermic even coming into the checkpoints, there was first aid available for them. And fire pits, there's fire barrels at each of the checkpoints as well so that people can stay warm. But there was also between checkpoint 5 and checkpoint 6, close to the Yukon-BC border, there was a rock slide. Not too big of a rock slide, but there was a big boulder in the middle of one of the lanes. And so our race marshals had to go and put a bunch of reflective gear that they had, extra gear in their truck, and they had to basically decorate this boulder in the middle of the highway so that people could see that it was there, and then contacted the highway's crew, and they had to come in and remove it.
You don't want your vans running into that, yeah.
No, and it was quite large.
Wow.
And of course, yeah, you're always dealing with wildlife. I mean, you're out in the middle of the night a lot of the time in nature. So there's been bears walk through checkpoints and like porcupines and that sort of thing that have been seen along the way. But we've never had any issues as far as confrontation with any of the animals, which is good.
So when the van is following the runner, they must sort of leapfrog ahead of them. They don't just sort of cruise along at the runner's pace, right?
No, and I mean, I thought that's one thing that we struggle with every year is trying to explain that to people. We essentially call it pacing a runner when your vehicle is following you too close behind you. It's not pleasant for runners that are running behind you as well, because then they're sucking in the exhaust from the vehicle that's in front of them. So we try to promote the leapfrog effect. Yes, so you support your runner, you get them their water, see how long they want to go without support, and then drive up 5 kilometers, pull over to the side of the road, and wait for them to pass you again, and then be able to support them.
Mm-hmm.
It is a safety hazard for people to follow too closely behind their runner. The highway isn't closed; it's open to regular traffic, and so for people that are not part of our event, it can be really frustrating when cars are not driving the speed limit or crawling on the highway, and so it's just not safe for them. People are going to whip around them, and there could be an accident of some sort. So,
although I suppose there's probably not much traffic at that time of year, especially in the middle of the night.
No, but there are, it's mostly southbound traffic that we're dealing with at that point. It's like the big ore trucks and fuel trucks going from the Alaska Highway down to Skagway and that sort of thing that are on the road. And then getting into the daytime hours, there is local traffic coming to and from Skagway, Carcross, and that sort of thing. So, but in the at night is the hardest part, because the runners are on the same side as the vehicles, so they're running on the right-hand side of the road. Come daylight, they move to the left, and so it's a little bit less of an issue with support at that point, because they just stay on the right and the runners are on the left. So. Mm.
Yeah, so what kind of preparation do folks need to do? I'm just thinking reflectors, obviously. They probably need their passports. What kind of advice do you give them before doing this?
So we really try to get it out there that people need to be visible at nighttime. They need to wear, we have mandatory reflective gear that we have in their race packages for them. So last year we brought in like a slap reflective bracelet, which was mandatory for them to wear on the left-hand side of their body when they're running. And so that really helps with being visible on the road. As well, their bibs have a reflective strip of tape on the bottom. But we also tell them, you know, if you have reflective gear or flashing LED gear to wear it, it never hurts to be more visible out there.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, so that is mandatory. And then just have fun, really.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to train and that sort of thing, you can.
If you want to be a cheater and train, right.
Yeah. But a lot of people just kind of jump into it and they just have fun with it, and which is great too. So
just non-runners who just say, oh, this will be fun, and they just go out and do it.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of those actually.
Uh-huh.
Or there's a team that loses a runner, you know, right before the race, and then they just grab a friend and they're like, you're going to run this leg. And they're like, okay. And they have fun with it. So
in terms of the travel arrangements, You need to get yourself to Skagway and somewhere or other. And then you end up in Whitehorse, and then I guess you need a hotel, and then just drive home in your van or however you're going to do it. It would seem like that might be a little bit complicated, or maybe drive back to the starting point or something like that. How do people handle that?
So a lot of the people that come from, well, Juneau and Skagway and that sort of thing, they take the ferry, and there's 2 to 3 ferries that come from Juneau.
Oh, I see.
So some people fly like from Anchorage to Juneau and take the ferry.
That's probably a fun part of it, having all those other runners on the ferry.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think there was someone posted a video a couple of years ago, and they were recruiting a runner at that point on the ferry because one of their runners had dropped out just before the race. And so they had this video that they posted online, and they were recruiting another runner on the ferry because they're all runners.
Right.
On those ferries coming into Skagway.
Or poaching from someone else's team.
Yeah, exactly. But I do know there's quite a few teams that rent motorhomes in Anchorage and drive down to Skagway for the start of the race, and then that's their support vehicle along the way. And then they park it at the campground here in town, go to the dance, and then they go home the next day. And then, of course, for people from the Yukon, we just drive down to Skagway, and then those vehicles come back to Whitehorse and that sort of thing. But,
so how much does it cost to enter the race?
So for a full 10-leg team, it's right now we're having our early bird registration, and that's open till June 23rd. So it's $750 for a team to register. And for the other categories, for walking teams, it's $425 for early bird, and the youth team, same, $425. We also have an ultra category, which is a 4-leg solo run from Carcross to Whitehorse. And that one is $70 for early bird. And then it goes up $50 after June 23rd.
So all of those prices go up $50 for later.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it sounds really fun. I think I would love to do it. It just sounds like it'd be great camaraderie is the main thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, everyone I think that's one of their favorite, a lot of the feedback that we hear is that it's just such a great time to connect with their friends and have fun and in this really neat experience of running throughout the night on the White Pass.
Yeah.
Into Whitehorse. So, yeah, no, it's a really great race. It's a lot of fun. We try to promote our volunteers to dress up or have themes for their checkpoints, too. So I know there was a lot of different fun themes out there last year. There was a neon checkpoint. There's been a Mexican. There was a hockey theme 1 year. And just, yeah, it's a lot of fun. And we want the teams to dress up as well and have fun with it. And we have a prize at the finish line for the best dressed team.
The best costumes? What's one of the crazier costumes you've had?
Last year there was, what did they do? It was like a wrestling of sorts. And so they all had all these different wrestling characters that they were. And this one guy was wearing this little Speedo. And that's when he ran in the entire time.
Burr.
It was cold.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but they had fun. They didn't have any complaints about it. So
neat. Well, thank you, Sandra Soares. She's the race coordinator for the Klondike Relay from Sport Yukon. And we'll have their website up on our website at outdoorexplorer.org if you want to learn more and maybe get in on this race. Thanks for being with us, Sandra.
Thank you so much for having me.
So that's all for today's show. I'm Charles Woolforth. Our producer is Eric Bork. Our production assistant and who lines up the guests is Hannah Duro. Please join us again next week, and I'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal, The Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and on iTunes. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.